The NYG Files, the ultimate Giants podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
We are checking in with Giant Insider Jerry Foley. You can find him at Giant Insider on Twitter. Jerry, how's it going this evening?
Good, Sean. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Well, we watched a pretty tough game here. The Giants dropped a close one to the Redskins. They had an opportunity to go 3-0, really take a big, big stranglehold almost, even though it's early and it's only a game or two, but with the in-division wins, that would have been a huge game for the Giants. Very disappointing to drop this one.
Yeah, what happened was they seemed to fall into the same trap that they've fallen in over the last 3 or 4 years where really all three phases of the game kind of failed them in this loss. It was a chance for McAdoo to kind of cement his early legacy at least and win a game that everyone kind of thought they should have won. And unfortunately, offense, special teams, and defense, there were breakdowns in all three phases. And, you know, the way they lose or, you know, close games kind of reared its ugly head yesterday, so.
Well, you know, for losing Rashad Jennings was not enough. Now Shane Vereen is down, and the running backs core is, let's say, depleted. Now, they got a pretty good performance, actually, in a pinch by Erlians Darkwub. But how deep does it go here for the New York running game?
Well, it's funny because Vereen fumbled one time up until 2011. Up until this year, rather. And over the last two games, he's fumbled three times. So you wonder if that triceps injury was bothering him yesterday that he fumbled twice and, you know, the Redskins recovered one. Right now they have Orleans Darkwa and a rookie, Paul Perkins, who was drafted in the fifth round. And Bobby Rainey's probably going to take over for that third down role that Vereen kind of serves now. So I'm expecting Orleans Darkwa to get the bulk of the carry. He's looked pretty good. He's averaged around 5 yards a carry over the last couple of years in the chances that he's gotten. But we might see a little bit of the fifth-round pick, Paul Perkins, but expect Rainey to take over the third-down role of Shane Vereen if Rashad Jennings can't stay healthy.
And this is a challenge when you start having those running backs get hurt, but that's why nowadays people do it by committee. So the fact that Darkwell was so effective, and again, in the limited time yesterday, 10 carries, 53 yards, a touchdown, they would take that if they could get it. Going to the passing game, Eli Manning, 350 yards, does that every day of the week, it seems like. But the two interceptions, the two sacks, those were problematic. What happened with Eli? He certainly had the pressure. He had two fumbles. Fortunately, didn't lose any. This was not the best game for him when you take away everything but the yardage.
No, it's weird. He seemed to get away from the wide receivers. And I was saying on the first touchdown pass to Sterling Shepard, the play before, he missed them wide open. And then he kind of nodded his head at him in the huddle and went right back to him. I'm thinking, man, these guys have to love playing for him because he goes right back to them. He admits kind of his own mistake. And, you know, he found Shepard for the touchdown. But he got away from throwing to him, Beckham, and Cruz pretty, I'd say, in the middle of that game. And it's funny, they took a nice lead. And then he started kind of getting cute and trying to spread it around. He threw a few balls at Donnell. And the first interception to Will Tye was really Ty's fault. I mean, he basically stopped running the route. But at the end of the game, you know, to go to Vereen and to go to anyone else but Beckham was really insane. I mean, he should have been going to his wideouts the whole game, and he kind of got away from it just to spread the ball around.
It really was remarkable when you look at the numbers. I mean, Victor Cruz, 70 yards receiving on only three catches, getting the deep ball work in there. Sterling Shepard, as you mentioned, got that touchdown, 73 yards again, looking really outstanding as a rookie opposite side Odell Beckham. And then Beckham, ho-hum, 121 yards on seven catches. And these balls were going down the field. You know, all three of those guys had longs of at least 23 yards. So I understand why Manning wants to move the ball around, add a little bit of deception there, but you're right. At a certain point, especially when you're limited in the running game due to injuries, it does seem like you want to keep focusing on your strengths, and Manning went away from that. That's an interesting spin on it. Going to the other side of the ball, Kirk Cousins, 296 yards, two touchdowns. A week ago, people were wondering if Kirk Cousins was going to be very effective at all, and then this game kind of happens. What did you see at the breakdowns on defense to let that occur? Because it's not as if they were really a huge threat on the ground, but it seemed like he could spread the ball around. You had multiple guys, you know, four receivers had more than four catches for the Redskins. That's way too varied and more than anyone probably expected.
Yeah, I think there was just no pass rush yesterday, and Spagnuolo was relying on the front four to get there, and JPP was getting close. Vernon had a sack, but he really wasn't hitting. They weren't hitting Cousins even. Like, they had two sacks, but I don't know how many quarterback hits they had, but it couldn't have been more than four altogether. So the pass rush wasn't getting there. And then, you know, the secondary had a few injuries. Eli Apple went down with a hamstring, and DRC was there on the Deshaun Jackson bomb, but, you know, didn't make the play. And then he leaves the game with a groin injury. They already came into the game without Darian Thompson healthy. So as that game went along, some guys got hurt in the secondary. The linebackers really weren't doing much, and there was no pass rush. What surprised me, though, is that Spagnuolo didn't blitz more. And I don't understand it. I get when you're apprehensive to blitz because your secondary is injured, but for a bulk of that game, they weren't injured, and he still wasn't blitzing, and they weren't getting there. I didn't understand why he wouldn't dial up the blitz, because even if you have the best corners in the league, if Kirk Cousins or anybody has 8 seconds or 7 seconds to throw the ball, guys are going to get open. So I didn't get that at all.
Ben McAdoo said about those corners, about Eli Apple and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, that they're not going to rule anyone out. They have until Monday, so they have an opportunity to let them get a little bit better. But that is a challenge. I was looking at some of the things that intrigued me with the snap counts, because we've looked at that front four and even front seven of the Giants that's been revamped and looked really effective at the beginning of the season and generally has looked well. But this is what struck me. Jason Pierre-Paul played all the defensive snaps. Olivier Vernon, 90% of them. Jonathan Hankins, 87% of them. Are these guys maybe being pushed a little bit too hard, and what we've seen is some of the fatigue maybe getting into the pass rush and becoming problematic?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, they're really good against the run, right? So the Giants have been very good against the run, you know, outside of the fourth quarter yesterday. But the reserves behind those guys are Odighizuwa, who the third-round pick from UCLA last year, who really hasn't come along the way they would have liked. Jay Bromley, I think he was a third-round pick 3 years ago from Syracuse, and Kerry Winner was a free agent a couple of years back. So the reserves aren't getting in there, because I just think the talent level from Harrison, Vernon, JPP, and Hankins really drops off when you put those other guys in. So to your point, I do think they are playing a lot. And quite frankly, those guys are so good against the run that I think Spagnuolo is apprehensive to take them out. So
I want to go back to Odell Beckham after hearing some of Ben McAdoo's comments. Now, he said specifically, again, this was another Beckham and Josh Norman matchup. These have always been entertaining. But McAdoo said that he wanted Beckham to become, quote, less of a distraction so they can focus a little more on football. He said he needs to control his emotions better, become less of a distraction to himself and to his teammates. It's our job to help him with that process of maturing. Now, this is a guy that had a great game on the surface, you know, 7 catches, 121 yards. But when you have your coach actually calling you out and saying it's becoming distracting, this is very interesting, because he's a guy that plays with emotion. He's a guy that plays with fire. It's part of what makes him who he is. This is kind of the tau of Odell Beckham Jr. How do they find some sort of compromise between Beckham needing who he needs to be effective on the field, but also making sure that his coach's needs are fulfilled and he can focus on the game and not making sure that he has to babysit Beckham on the sidelines?
I was surprised he said that. I mean, look, once Beckham threw his tantrum, the Giants started throwing him the ball, and then all of a sudden they're back in the game. So I don't understand why they got away from Beckham or the receivers to begin with. So if you look at the first touchdown to Shepard, the first person to greet him is Odell Beckham Jr. He runs over to him, gives him a high five, hugs him. So Beckham was mad not only that they were losing, but that he wasn't getting the ball. I mean, I've never seen Beckham do that when they're winning and he's not getting as many passes. He didn't do that against Dallas. He didn't do that against the Saints. And he had pretty pedestrian games in those two. So I think his thinking is, look, if we're going to lose and you're not throwing me the ball or the other wide receivers, he threw a tantrum. I mean, it was a little immature. He hit the net, but with his helmet, the kicking net on the sideline. But I didn't blame him for that, and I kind of understood his frustration. I mean, now everyone's making a big deal out of it, so maybe, yeah, he has to grow up a bit. But, you know, when other athletes do that, like I referred to Paul O'Neill, you know, the Yankees outfielder, when he would punch the Gatorade bucket, you know, he was competitive, right? Everyone said, oh, he's so competitive. But when Odell Beckham Jr. does it, he's immature and a baby. So I just think it's kind of a double standard. I get why people say it, but I totally understand why he was so frustrated.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that. I find that peculiar. It's not really a Keyshawn Johnson type situation where he goes out of the media and then complains about teammates and quarterbacks and not getting the ball. I do find it a little peculiar, and it seemed weird in that game when Beckham was clearly their most dangerous weapon. Sort of an odd decision for the coach to call him out after that particular loss. But they go on now to Minnesota for the next Monday Night Football game against a team that is surprisingly to a lot of people 3-0. They don't have Matt Khalil at tackle. They don't have Adrian Peterson. They don't have Teddy Bridgewater. But they're still managing to get it done because the Vikings have a much more dangerous defense than I think a lot of people understand. How do the Giants learn from this game and go ahead and take that to Minnesota and try to get out there with a win?
That's funny because Manning's probably had his worst games against the Minnesota Vikings, and you can already see him throwing the ball down the field if things get out of hand. But like you said, the Vikings have a really good defense. They don't turn the ball over, and that usually means that you're going to be successful, and they're 3-0 already. So I'm thinking, you know, you can't be afraid of that defense, but you also have to try and attack them. You can't get away from your line. I think they have to learn from this. You can't get away from those three weapons. I mean, I think it's the best receiving core, you know, the top three receivers as a group in the league. So if I'm the Giants, I don't get too cute and try and spread it around. And I you know, you what's the expression? You bring with, or you lose with who you came to the dance with. I mean, you go to Beckham, you go to Shepard, you go to Cruz, and if you get away from that and you start going to Ty, Denell, and other guys, you know, you're not being true to the talent on your team. So, you know, try and obviously run the ball. Don't get away from that. But as far as the passing game, take your shots with Beckham and Shepard and Cruz.
He is Jerry Foley, the Giant Insider, and you can find him at Giant Insider on Twitter. This is going to be a big week for the Giants, a bit of a this is a test coming forward, and especially as they try to get a little more ground and get that division behind them. Jerry, thank you so much for the time and the insight.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Next up, we'll have the coach, Brian Billick. Stay tuned.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really, that the Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. And it's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. they ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It seemed like almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, get in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything. They've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder. And I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last eight division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they have Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense, defense, defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They have eight starters that were our former first or second round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe to an extent a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost two. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to win two games. And so, oh, my gosh, you doubled your losses from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That, you know, that's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportions. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example, you look at the game. Drew Brees feels like, if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team, it's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great, great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was a defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week where you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
Better option, here's the difference. You had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid. The quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four, I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make them go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo is actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentz's and Dak Prescott's that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fish is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
he's going to have to. And I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. I can't – it is hard to believe. But as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top-flight first, you know, upper echelon Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
John, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious, he has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in a, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise, but it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it, bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is he's taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? But, you know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense. Should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name's Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. And I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.